know, you might have noticed there was a propensity at this time to label women as hysterical. The term was thrown around quite frequently, and in the humble opinion of your narrators, far too easily. Then it became a vicious cycle. The more they protested, the crazier they were labelled. We are going on record here to say that we feel this treatment was completely unfair. Mr. Blackwood took a step toward Rochester. "We will be waiting for you, sir." Mr. Mason, Mr. Blackwood, Charlotte, and Jane left.
"She attacked me that night," Mr. Mason said. "I had no idea such madness had overtaken her."
Jane took Charlotte's hand. "I am feeling rather faint." "Yes, poor Jane. You have been traumatized." Mr. Blackwood and Mr. Mason bowed as the ladies walked out, as if pre-Victorian protocol mattered a whit at this point. Charlotte walked Jane to her bedchamber. They were quiet as Charlotte helped Jane unbutton her gown and fold it carefully and take off her veil and place it on top of the dress. Jane put on her usual grey dress, and then they both sat on the edge of her bed.
"So I was possessed," Jane said.
Charlotte nodded.
"I can't believe he did that to you. He should be arrested." "There's no way they would believe it." Jane could hear the exhaustion in her own voice. "Do you remember anything while you were possessed?"
Jane shook her head.
"No. One minute I was talking to Mr. Rochester, and the next, nothing." "And then you find out?"
"He has a wife," Charlotte said. She pulled her notebook out of her pocket.
"Really?"
Jane said. Charlotte blushed and set it aside. "We must leave here at once." Jane went to her wardrobe, took out her other dress, and began to fold.
"About the wife. Mr. Rochester kept saying she was mad, but I didn't find her to be so."
She hoisted her trunk onto the bed.
"Frustrated, yes. Exhausted, yes. But mad."
Charlotte took Jane's stockings out of a drawer and folded them.
"I agree, dear. But then, I've never met someone who was supposed to be mad."
"It almost seemed," Jane paused.
"It almost seemed like if we loosened her restraints and sat down to tea, we could have a..."
She was interrupted by a rap at the door.
"Jane?"
Rochester's voice came through the thick oak. Jane held a finger to her lips and met Charlotte's eyes.
"I just want to leave,"
Jane whispered. Charlotte nodded and placed the stockings in the trunk. Helen ghosted in and noticed the packing.
"Oh, good. We're leaving."
Three more strikes against the door.
"Jane, please. I'm sorry it all happened as it did, but I was desperate." "Have you ever been so desperate, Jane? Have you ever been so hungry you would do anything for bread? So cold you would do anything for warmth? So tired you would do anything for rest?"
Jane closed her eyes. She knew that feeling. She knew Charlotte knew that feeling as well. Helen's head burst into flames. Helen had a point. Jane never would have deceived someone so as Mr. Rochester had deceived her, not to mention the fact that she never would have had someone possessed to get her way. The thought made her stomach roll. Another knock.
"Jane, you are the most radiant thing I've ever seen. Remember when you bewitched my horse on that road?"
Charlotte raised her eyebrows at Jane, and Jane shook her head and pointed at Helen, who shook her flaming head and pointed at Jane.
"I knew then that you had come here to change my life. I knew then that the happiness which had eluded me so far had come to me at last."
Jane couldn't take it any more.
"How could you say such things? I am, by all living accounts, plain."
"Did you see what I was married to?" Rochester said.
"Oh, bother,"
Helen said. Jane rolled up her sketches and paintings, and Charlotte tucked away her brushes.
"Jane, it doesn't matter if I'm married, because I would be satisfied having you merely as a companion, a sister almost. We could live in a villa I have in the south of France."
He knocked again, this time with more force.
"Jane, we would have separate living compartments, and we would only spare a kiss on the cheek for birthdays."
"Please stop talking, Mr. Rochester," Jane said. "I am not interested in that."
"You are the love of my life."
"Which life is that? Because you seem to be living so many."
"But we had something special, didn't we? I know you felt it too."
Jane stamped her foot.
"You lie and manipulate and twist until you get your way. You propose to me, even though you have a wife.
who's conveniently locked away in the attic. And when I asked for more time, you had me possessed. So no, I don't think I will live with you in the south of France as sodding brother and sister. The flames in Helen's hair sputtered out. Charlotte stood frozen. Jane's eyes were wide as if she couldn't believe the words that had just come out of her mouth. Jane was about to crack a smile when a loud thump came at the door, and then another, and another.
"Jane, open the door!"
Rochester's voice was enraged.
"Open the door!"
Louder thud sounded as if Rochester was throwing the full weight of his body at the solid oak. Jane looked around for something to defend them with, but there was only a hairbrush and then pieces of furniture that were too big for them to wield as weapons.
"Maybe the window," Charlotte said. "We can't possibly use the window as a weapon," Jane said.
"No, to escape."
They ran across the room and looked out the glass, but Jane's bedchamber was 3 floors up, and below them, the ground was all packed dirt and grass.
"I'll go first,"
Helen said. She ghosted through the window and floated to the ground.
"Now you!"
Jane waved her off.
"Quick, Charlotte! The dresser!"
Thud! "Jane, you may not see it now, but soon I will make you see." Thud!
Jane and Charlotte put their full weight against the side of the dresser. It moved an inch at a time. They shoved and shoved, and then all of a sudden, the dresser toppled over onto its side, landing just short of the door and in no way blocking it.
"No!"
Jane exclaimed.
Thud!
A piece of the doorframe went flying across the room. Jane and Charlotte grabbed hold of each other.
Thud!
The top of the door separated from the hinge, and then the entire thing fell to the floor. Rochester stood there in silhouette against the light from the corridor.
"I asked you nicely," he growled.
"You can't really believe that, can you?" Jane said.
Rochester raised his foot to come toward them, but just then a figure came barreling against his side.
"Alexander!"
Charlotte exclaimed.
"Ladies, run!"
he huffed from exertion. Rochester was momentarily stunned by the blow. Jane and Charlotte scrabbled past him and sprinted down the corridor, followed by Mr. Blackwood. Moments later, Rochester's footsteps followed.
"Faster!"
Mr. Blackwood said.
"We're going as fast as we can,"
Charlotte said back.
"Have you seen the shoes we're expected to wear?"
The three of them made it to the Great Hall and almost across it, but Rochester caught up and he tackled Mr. Blackwood. Both men flew to the ground. Jane and Charlotte stopped. The two men lay there, their chests heaving as they tried to regain their breath.
"Mr. Blackwood, are you all right?"
Charlotte said.
"Yes," he said, mid-cough.
The men brushed themselves off and then stood, facing each other, knees bent, hands out, combat position.
"Go!"
Mr. Blackwood said to Jane and Charlotte.
"Find us a Hayworth,"
Charlotte said.
"We'll go to Hayworth."
"I will find you. Now go!"
Mr. Blackwood said as he lunged for a sword on the wall. The two ladies flew through the door and out into the cold, dark night.
27. Alexander. Alexander grabbed a sword off its mount on the wall. A sword wouldn't have been his first choice as a weapon, but he certainly knew how to use one. It wasn't as though people like Rochester kept pistols mounted to their walls. Meanwhile, in America, a pistol would have made the intimidation factor much higher, he thought. Rochester's glare settled on him. The sword, the guarded stance he'd taken up.
"You're ruining everything," Rochester growled. "She's supposed to be mine." "She won't have you," Alexander said. "I'm going to get her back no matter what it takes."
"Get over it." Rochester scanned the room for another weapon. There, a second sword.
"We were meant to be together."
Rochester slid the blade from its mount. So it would be a duel then. That was fine. Alexander could duel.
"You had to possess her with a ghost to make her agree to marry you."
And who had that woman been? She'd been young and beautiful and dressed in some, interesting attire that made Alexander immediately avert his eyes. Yet somehow she seemed familiar, too. He'd seen that interesting attire before, briefly.
"She's like the sun, and I am the earth feeling its rays."
"The sun and the earth will never be together," Alexander frowned. Miss Eyre was delightful, sure, but like the sun.
That seemed a little over the top.
Who was that woman? That ghost you were about to marry? Someone who used to be mine.
Rochester attacked with a flurry of manoeuvres that would have startled Alexander if Alexander had been less prepared. But he blocked so quickly that steel rang, and both men launched into a complicated dance of death. Fire roared through his veins. This was what Alexander had wanted all along.
I know it was you, he said, and now you're going to pay.
Rochester performed a marionette's demise, a move that involved several smaller moves and lots of fainting.
What did I do?
Alexander countered Rochester's attack with an artist's curse.
My name is Alexander Blackwood. You killed my father. Prepare to... Who's your father? Nicholas. I've never met anyone named Nicholas.
A lie. Alexander knew it was a lie. Lots of people were named Nicholas. He attacked using a new move called the Three Ladies' Luck, thinking his opponent might not know how to counter it. But Rochester was clearly a man who'd continued his sword studies throughout his life, because two sharp clacks of the blades and Alexander was blocked.
You're outmatched, boy. I'm a master swordsman, unlike you.
Rochester growled as their fight spilled across the room, around sofas and chairs, endangering paintings and potted plants.
Prepare to die!
Alexander shot forward, trying to surprise Rochester by going straight for the man's heart, but the villain darted aside and tapped Alexander's sword away.
My father was your friend. I really don't know what you're talking about, said Rochester as the fight moved into the drawing room. I haven't killed anyone.
Why was the man denying it? What was the point? Alexander charged with the three ladies' luck again, hoping Rochester wouldn't expect it a second time. The man did. He was a better swordsman, Alexander had to admit. But then Rochester slipped on a pair of spectacles someone had carelessly left lying around, and Alexander pressed his advantage while the man was off balance, shoving him to the floor. Chest heaving, Alexander dug the tip of his sword to Rochester's throat.
I've waited 14 years to avenge my father's murder. I don't know him, Rochester said. Truly, I do not.
Alexander glared down, hatred making his hand shake. Blood pooled where the sword point pierced skin. He'd never killed a man before, and there was no coming back from it once he took this step.
I didn't kill him, repeated Rochester.
At the man's throat, a small iron key gleamed, and several thoughts crashed through Alexander at once. Mrs. Rochester insisting this man wasn't her husband. The repeated confused claims about not knowing Alexander's father, and his description of Miss Eyre's beauty. Alexander slashed the sword to the left, cutting through the chain. The key went skittering across the floor, and abruptly, the ghost of a younger man ripped from Rochester's body. Rochester, the real Rochester, slumped to the side. Alexander lunged for the key. The ghost glared at him.
You meddling fool! This place was mine. I had everything I wanted, and I would have gotten away with it too, if it hadn't been for...
Alexander bopped the ghost on the head, sucking him back into the talisman. Several minutes later, after Alexander had dragged Rochester into his room and laid him out on the bed, he went to find Mrs. Fairfax and the rest of the house staff. He didn't explain the situation, but now that he wore his mask, they seemed to understand that something of the otherworldly persuasion had occurred there today.
"Have you seen Miss Bronte and Miss Eyre?" he asked, as he waited for Mrs. Fairfax to finish preparing a tray of tea. They ran through here like the hounds of Hades were after them. Why, I've never seen girls move so fast in my entire life.
Alexander had a lot of questions concerning what she knew about the events there, but then the tea was finished, and he took it upstairs, along with the lockbox containing the small iron key. Rochester was just sitting up in his bed, looking confused as he surveyed the room. He lifted his hands and let his sheets slide between his fingers. Alexander poured a cup of tea and offered it to the man.
Can you speak?
The man nodded slowly.
I think... yes.
His voice wasn't gravelly. It had been used recently, of course. But after being possessed for years, he'd perhaps forgotten how to use it. How to shape the words on his own. Tea would help, though. Tea always helped.
Drink up.
Alexander took his seat and nodded to the teacup Rochester had been staring at.
I have questions. I must...
Rochester tried to stand, but collapsed back to the bed a moment later. My wife, where? Before Alexander could find a kind way to tell him that his wife had been locked in the attic for a decade and a half, realization crossed Rochester's face.
Oh, no.
He dropped his face into his hands and groaned.
He locked her away, that bastard, he...
He, Alexander said.
Who? My brother, Roland, always Wellington's lackey. What do you mean?
Finally, Alexander could get some answers. But Rochester lurched to his feet, staggering past Alexander and the tea.
I must go to my wife.
Wait, Alexander said.
I still have questions.
For someone who hadn't used his own legs in years, Rochester was fast. Alexander followed just in time to hear Rochester say,
You! You know better than to come here. Go back. Forgive me, I came because...
At that moment, Alexander emerged from the room to find Rochester on the stairs to the third floor, and Mason standing just below him. Both men went silent upon Alexander's appearance.
We'll talk later,
Rochester hissed. Then he ran up the stairs two at a time.
What was that?
Alexander said. Mason shook his head.
It's nothing.
It had definitely been something. Alexander didn't have time for more mysteries right now.
Good luck with nothing, sir.
Then he headed downstairs and out the door, hoping that he could catch up with Miss Bronte and Miss Eyre before they made it too far away. But he didn't see them on the road. Charlotte had said they would go on to Haworth. He would have to meet up with them there, later, of course, after he'd had time to properly question the real Mr. Rochester. But when he went into the house again, he discovered the Rochesters had disappeared, and no one seemed to know to where. Even Grace Poole was missing. How was Alexander supposed to get answers if everyone kept vanishing? Just then, a pigeon landed on the windowsill and cooed at him. A small note was wrapped around its ankle.
"Report to me immediately,"
it read in Wellington's handwriting. Before Alexander left, he returned to the bedroom where the ghost of Roland had attacked the young ladies. There he found Miss Bronte's notebook and tucked it into his breast pocket, resting his hand over it for just a moment. Then he gathered the lockbox and the rest of his belongings and left Thornfield. At Westminster, he quickly went through all the rituals of gaining entrance to the building, the secret rooms, and strode toward the great library with the lockbox tucked under one arm. Anticipation made his heart beat faster when he knocked on the door and waited for Wellington to answer. Then he stepped inside.
"Good evening, Mr. Blackwood,"
said the Duke.
"What have you brought me?"
Alexander approached the desk and placed the lockbox on the side near him.
A ghost. The normal offerings, then?
Wellington smiled warmly.
I'd wondered where you'd gone off to so quickly. I sent a messenger to your flat the other day, but your landlady said you'd left in a hurry with Miss Bronte and a strange man.
Yes, sir. There was an urgent matter at Thornfield. I received word that Miss Eyre was in danger, and we rushed to her aid.
And is she safe now?
Wellington asked. Alexander nodded.
She was forced to flee Rochester. You won't believe what he attempted to do.
Wellington's face shifted into curious dread, exactly what Alexander would normally expect.
What?
He said.
Don't hold me in suspense. What was that nefarious villain going to do with Miss Eyre?
He was going to marry her. He had her possessed.
Oh.
The talisman was a...
Then, standing here in the library... A discussion of the pearl necklace rushed back at him. They'd spoken of it before. Here, years ago, it had been the very set of pearls with which he'd captured that opera singer, Celine, and brought the string to the Duke. So how had the pearls reached Rochester? Unless Wellington had given the pearls to Roland. Rochester had called his brother Wellington's lackey.
Oh.
Wellington's expression fell.
I see the understanding on your face. You just remember the pearls, didn't you?
What pearls?
Alexander said as he hopefully scanned the room for a weapon. But there was nothing within reach.
You've been lying to me all this time. You're a lying liar who... lies.
Wellington sighed.
Of course I've been lying. I'm a politician.
But why?
Alexander's heart sank as his whole world began to crumble apart.
For money. For power. To silence those who try to move against me. Like my father. Your father lacked vision. And then he decided to stop me, along with the foolish Rochesters. I had to take care of it.
And with those simple words, Alexander's entire world was shattered.
Your father was the easy part. It was those Rochesters who've given me trouble all these years, even after I had him possessed and her locked away. But I don't need them any more, now that I've got Miss Eyre.
Have you got Miss Eyre? They would have reached Haworth by now, Alexander thought, unless Wellington had somehow intercepted them.
No, but I soon will.
And at that moment, Wellington bashed Alexander over the head with the lockbox. Stars popped in his vision and blood poured from a gash. And though Alexander scrambled to fight, he went down quickly. Over the next several moments, he drifted in and out of consciousness, aware just enough to realize he was being dragged through an unfamiliar hall, tinged bright red with blood leaking into his eye, before the stink of the river overwhelmed him.
I hoped it wouldn't come to this, Wellington said. I did care about you. I hoped you would see things my way, since I'm the one who raised you. But you're too much like your father.
Then the traitor rolled Alexander over and dumped him into the Thames. Alexander's last thought was this. At least Miss Bronte and Miss Eyre are safe. 28. Charlotte.
We're going in circles, observed Jane. We can't be.
Charlotte lifted a hand to shield her eyes and gazed out at the windswept moors, which spread around them on all sides. There was no town or house or even the merest sign of human activity to mar the landscape. Not that Charlotte could actually see the landscape. Sometime during the scuffle back at Thornfield Hall, she'd misplaced her glasses. We'd like to pause here to observe a moment of silence for Charlotte Bronte's tortoiseshell spectacles, which met their untimely demise when she dropped them as she was fleeing Thornfield and being subsequently stepped on by Mr. Rochester, inadvertently saving Alexander's life. So all Charlotte saw of the moors was a reddish-slash-goldish blur, and the unusually large rock that was jutting out of the hill on one side of them.
"I know this moss-darkened granite crag may seem familiar," she said to reassure Jane, "but it's not the same moss-darkened granite crag we passed an hour ago. This is a different crag. I'm fairly certain of it."
Jane just stared at her.
"Helen says she cannot go any farther," she said hoarsely. "She must rest."
Charlotte did not have the energy to point out that Helen was deceased and incorporeal, and therefore could not rest more than she was already doing. But Charlotte's legs ached, and she could barely keep her eyes open, so she nodded, and the tragic little group stopped next to the familiar, yes, it was definitely the same one, she saw that now, moss-darkened granite crag, and sat for a moment in the marshy grass. How had they come to such a desolate place? Things had gone well enough the first day. After fleeing Thornfield, they'd walked until they'd reached a road, where a carriage had just happened to be passing by. They'd waved to it, and the driver had stopped. They'd asked where he was going, and he'd named a town not far from Haworth, where Charlotte had told Alexander to meet them. Haworth was Charlotte's home, sort of, even though she hadn't spent much time there, and it was safe, and Father and Bran would be there. The carriage driver said he'd take them for 30 shillings. Between them, Charlotte and Jane had been able to scrape together but 20. On that meagre amount. The driver had taken them as far as Whitcross, which was not a town but merely a place where four roads met at a crossroads. But it was reasonably close to Haworth, and Charlotte had assumed they could easily walk the rest of the way. And it would be quicker, she'd suggested, to go straight across the moors instead of taking the long way by road. And so, here they were, lost and cold, and in peril.
"Helen also says she's hungry," Jane reported.
Charlotte's stomach gurgled. She was no stranger to hunger, nor was Jane, she knew. But this hunger was beyond anything she'd ever experienced before. They had not eaten anything save a handful of questionable berries in the 2 days since they'd left Thornfield Hall. The first day, the hunger had been a sharp, persistent presence in her stomach. Now it had reached a state of floaty, light-headed emptiness. And like we said before, there was not a town in sight.
"I'm sorry we're lost," Charlotte said. "I have never had the keenest sense of direction."
"It's all right," murmured Jane. "At least I'm in possession of my own body. That's something. There are worse things than being lost." Like starving to death, Charlotte thought. or dying of exposure, both of which seemed like a distinct possibility in the near future. This is why Charlotte had always considered herself an indoors type of girl. Just then, they all distinctly heard the faraway tolling of a bell. Charlotte and Jane both sat up.
Helen says, "What was that?" said Jane. "A church bell," Charlotte gasped. "Could you tell what direction it was coming from?"
"This way." Jane took the lead this time, slogging through the heather in the direction of the sound. But after a moment, the tolling stopped, and the only noise they could hear was the persistent voice of the wind, and still they could see no town.
"Blast," said Charlotte. "We can't be far from Haworth." "Helen says her feet hurt," said Jane.
Charlotte had a blister on her big toe. She was pretty sure Helen didn't have a blister on her big toe. She sighed. It was getting dark. Soon it would be very dark, and even colder than it was now. And from the looks of the growing bank of dark clouds overhead, it was going to rain. She felt a drop on her face, then another on the crown of her head. They'd gone off without their bonnets. She didn't even have the carpet bag with the broken handle. She closed her eyes and tilted her head up as the rain started to come down in earnest, willing herself to just breathe and try not to think of the very real danger they were in. She imagined Mr. Blackwood on a horse, looking for them, worried, calling their names. Maybe he'd arrived at Haworth already. If so, he would have found them missing, and he'd be searching for them. Perhaps any moment now he'd find them. But Mr. Blackwood wasn't here. She swallowed down a lump in her throat. This was, she realized, the kind of transforming experience that the great writers always wrote about. This might very well be the depths of despair. It must be documented. That's when she realized that she'd left her notebook behind as well. This was the keenest loss of all. But then she couldn't have written anything down, even if she'd had her notebook. She was still missing her glasses, and there wasn't enough feeling in her cold fingers to hold a pen.
"I'm sorry, Charlotte," she heard Jane say in a quavering voice.
She opened her eyes. Jane was standing in front of her, her hair and the entire upper part of her dress soaked with rain, her expression a picture of the same utter dejection that Charlotte had just been feeling. It was hard to tell what with the rain, but Jane may have been crying.
"Why are you sorry?" Charlotte asked.
"I'm the one who got us lost."
"But this is all my fault," Jane said. "You wouldn't even be out here if it weren't for me. And now we could die."
"We're not going to die." But Charlotte's teeth were starting to chatter with cold.
"I've seen 3 ghosts out here already," Jane said. "All of them died not far from this very spot." "Can you ask them the way to Haworth?"
Charlotte closed the distance between Jane and herself and took Jane's chilly hand in hers. They tried to smile bravely at each other.
"Helen says being dead isn't really so bad."
"Helen," said Charlotte gently, "is not being terribly helpful." Jane frowned.
"Helen also says there's a light right behind you."
Charlotte spun around. The sky was darkening fast, night falling, but Jane was right. Against a faraway hillside, like a welcoming star, there was a light, shining dim but distant through the rain. Or at least she thought she saw it. She couldn't see too well.
"Helen says we should go toward the light," Jane said.
They dragged their exhausted limbs slowly in that general direction. To get to the light, they had to go through a bog. Charlotte kept tripping and falling in the mud, but Jane was always there to help her up. Together they struggled through the marshy ground and onto what turned out to be a road.
A road!
And the road led to a gate, and the gate led to a house, and at the door of the house, Charlotte's legs stopped working, and she sank down at the wet doorstep. She felt Jane's body come down beside her. Inside the house, they heard voices.
"Well, I will admit it's nice to be home," said one, a girl's voice, "even if it's only for a little while." "How long do you think we'll get to stay?"
said another, much younger girl's voice.
"The house will have to be sold," said the first. "We'll probably have until then."
Their voices were familiar. Charlotte had the mad thought that those sweet voices belonged to her sisters, Emily and Anne, which, of course, was impossible, as her sisters were still at Lowood. They were angels' voices, she decided.
"We should knock," croaked Jane,
but they were too exhausted.
"You knock, Helen,"
Charlotte said, but no knock sounded. So for the moment they lay on the doorstep next to each other, getting more and more drenched by the rain, until there were sudden footsteps on the path that led up to the door, followed by a muffled exclamation of surprise, and when Charlotte opened her eyes again, Bran's face was looming over hers. She hadn't expected an angel to look like Bran.
"Charlie," Bran cried,
"and Jane,
Miss Eyre,
what are you doing home?"
She gave a strangled laugh. They were still alive, apparently, and home. All this time wandering aimlessly, and now she'd landed on her own front doorstep. She laughed again, then groaned.
"Em, Annie," Bran called, "come quick."
The next few minutes went by in a blur. Emily and Anne, yes, her sisters were here, came running and helped Bran half carry, half drag both Jane and Charlotte into the house and in front of the parlour fire. Then Bran retreated to the kitchen, while Charlotte's sisters retrieved fresh and dry clothes for the unfortunate pair. There was a thin soup spooned into their mouths, blankets were wrapped around them, a spot of brandy administered, and after a while, Charlotte found that she had recovered enough to talk.
"What are you doing here?"
she asked Emily and Anne first off. She had a sinking feeling in her stomach that had nothing to do with hunger. Emily and Anne should be at Lowood. There was no reason for them to be here at Haworth unless...
"Father has died," Annie said gently.
"It was very sudden," said Emily.
"His heart."
"He was buried yesterday."
"We would have sent for you, of course," said Bran. "But you weren't at Lowood, and I didn't know where to find you. You were supposed to go back to school, Charlie, after I left you at the train station. Why did you not go back?"
He pressed his lips together in a way that reminded Charlotte of her father's scowl, which made her chest hurt. She and father had never been particularly close. He'd been a distant, almost cold figure for much of her life, but still, he'd been her father. And now, he was gone.
"I was diverted," she said to Bran.
"Never mind," he said, patting her hand. "You're here now, aren't you?"
"Yes, I'm here now. And you're here. In charge of everything." He nodded bravely. He seemed to have accepted this sudden change in his life's calling.
A parson. The man who'd see to the religious needs of the community. She wouldn't have believed him capable of such a thing. But in a mere week since they'd parted ways at the train station, her brother seemed to have changed. He was 16 now. He'd had his birthday, which she'd also missed. But he was looking and acting like he was 20, at the least. Somehow in the time since she'd last seen him, her brother had grown up.
"Have you heard from Mr. Blackwood?"
she asked him.
"Mr. Blackwood?"
Bran's expression tightened slightly, like the mention of Mr. Blackwood still brought up embarrassing recollections of his time in the society.
"No. Should I have heard from Mr. Blackwood?"
"He distracted Mr. Rochester so that Jane and I could make our escape," Charlotte explained. "He said he would meet us here."
"No, I have not seen him," Bran said.
A shiver made its way down Charlotte's spine, like a remnant from the cold she'd suffered on the moors.
"Well, he should be here soon, then. We can expect him any time now."
A week passed, but Mr. Blackwood didn't arrive. The first few days Charlotte jumped at every footfall she heard outside, sure that he had finally come, but it never turned out to be the illustrious Mr. Blackwood. And slowly it began to dawn on her that something had gone wrong to delay him so. Something had happened.
"Mr. Blackwood can handle himself," Bran kept telling her,
but Charlotte still worried.
"He probably returned to London to report to the society," Jane said as they were walking out in the garden.
"But he said he'd come find us," Charlotte argued.
"He said, and I quote, 'I will find you.'"
Jane shrugged. She'd been a bit on edge these last few days. They all had. The entire company, Bran and Charlotte, Emily and Annie, Jane and even Helen, apparently, for what Jane reported, were all feeling a sense of impending doom. They were, at the very least, in for a change. The house at Haworth was going to have to be sold, as the sisters had been discussing the night Charlotte and Jane arrived. Their father had left them no inheritance to speak of, just the parsonage, which Bran would be taking over. So Emily and Anne were going to be sent back to Lowood. Charlotte couldn't bear the thought of returning, so she'd secured herself a teaching position in the town, which came with a tiny little room attached to the schoolhouse. It wasn't a very glamorous job, but it was something.
"I suppose I should search for another position as a governess," Jane said now as they plodded along the garden path. She shuddered. "One that doesn't require references." "For what it's worth, I thought you were an excellent governess," Charlotte said.
Jane didn't answer. She was looking off into a patch of dead rose bushes, but she was seeing something else. Thornfield Hall, perhaps. Helen was still clearly hanging about Jane, but the true ghost that seemed to haunt Charlotte's friend was Mr. Rochester. Breaking up is hard to do. Charlotte kicked at a loose stone on the path. She hated the idea of Jane going off to another job somewhere and never seeing her again. She would have loved it if they could have all stayed on at Haworth, Emily and Annie and Bran and Jane, and played a happy family. But it was not to be. "I'll only stay another week, two at most," Jane was saying now, "and then I'll be off to find a new adventure in child-rearing. Hooray!" "Hooray," Charlotte agreed faintly. Behind them, a voice cleared gruffly. Jane and Charlotte turned to see Bran standing there. Charlotte lifted her glasses. We know, her tortoiseshell glasses were lost in the scuffle at Thornfield Hall, but Charlotte had discovered a spare, slightly more worn pair of spectacles in her dresser drawer in her room at Haworth. So, at this moment, she could see her brother perfectly well. He was dressed in some of Father's nicer clothes, although the pants fit him poorly, and he'd attempted to tame his wild mane of red hair with a comb and some water. He pushed his glasses up on his nose. "Hello, Charlie. Miss Eyre." He gave an awkward little bow. Hello, Bran," said Charlotte. "What are you doing?" He shifted from foot to foot. "I was wondering if it wouldn't be too much trouble, if you'd be so kind as to give me a private audience for a moment." "Huh?" Charlotte didn't get it. "With Miss Eyre." Bran's face was getting paler and paler. His freckles stood out horribly. "There is something I wish to speak to her regarding." It was silent for several heartbeats as both Charlotte and Jane were genuinely confused as to what Bran could possibly want. Then Charlotte said, "All right, whatever you say, dear," and tromped off toward the house, leaving Jane and Bran alone in the garden. Well, mostly alone. She stopped after she'd gone a few paces and tried to listen in on their conversation, but the wind was blowing, as it always seemed to be blowing in this part of England, and she could only make out a few words. Parsonage. He definitely said the word parsonage. Lowly parson, duty, family, and love? That's when Jane came charging up the path, shaking her head. Bran trailed behind her, his voice pleading.
"At least say you think about it."
"No," Jane burst out. "I will not marry you, Mr. Bronte. I cannot believe you would have the gall to ask me, not after everything that's happened."
"But don't you see, he would solve so many problems," he panted. "Jane, if we were to marry, you could stay on at Haworth. You'd have a place here. You'd have a family. If you don't marry me, where will you go?"
She stopped walking so fast he nearly crashed into her. She spun around and stuck a finger right in his face.
"Do you love me?"
she practically screamed.
"Well, no."
His face had gone from pale to bright red.
"But what's love got to do with it in this day and age? Our marriage could be like an arrangement between friends. If you like, we could live like brother and sister."
Jane got a frenzied look in her eyes.
"Well, that's just the most romantic thing anyone has ever said to me. At least since the last idiot who followed it up with trying to kill me."
Then she literally screamed and pushed him away from her. She turned and fled back down the path and into the house. Charlotte heard the door slam and then another slightly muffled scream of rage. Charlotte discovered that her mouth was hanging open. She shut it, turned to her stunned, woefully foolish younger brother, who was just staring after where Jane had gone. "Well, that didn't go very well, did it?" She managed a sympathetic smile.
"She does not want to marry me," he remarked.
"Clearly, and that's hardly surprising, considering what she's been through." His flush grew deeper.
"Oh, I know," he said sharply. "I'm strange-looking and I'm clumsy, and I make a mess of everything. But I was trying to do her a kindness. She has no one to turn to. I thought..."
"I know. I heard what you thought." Charlotte walked over and stuck her arm through his, turning him to move away from the house. "It was very thoughtful of you, Bran, but a little thoughtless as well."
"I'm sorry," he bleated.
"Don't tell me, tell her. But give her time to cool off first," she added quickly as they heard another bellow of rage from the house, this time followed by a crash of some kind. They walked for a while without speaking. Gradually, Bran's face returned to its regular colour. He pushed his glasses up on his nose.
"I'm a fool," he said with a rueful laugh.
"Yes, but I think you're going to be a wonderful parson," she said. His eyes brightened.
"You really believe so?"
she laughed.
"I believe so.
I believe it with all of my heart. 29. Jane now knew why they called it a broken heart. It was a physical pain in her chest. It was a malady as strong as influenza, and for the first few days she wondered if it was an illness.
"Feel my forehead," she'd said to Charlotte many times. Charlotte humored her each time, but Jane never had a fever. "He was an evil man who treated you terribly," Charlotte said.
"I know," Jane said.
"It's just that my heart hasn't yet received that information." Helen sighed.
"If only our hearts had brains."
"And what if he's the only man who will ever fancy me? I'm poor and plain, with little to recommend me. He was supposed to be my hero out of a Jane Austen novel."
"There, there," Charlotte said, patting her hand.
"I always knew something was wrong with that man," Helen said. "I mean, I don't want to say I told you so."
"Then don't," Jane exclaimed. Charlotte raised her eyebrows.
"Sorry, Helen was in the middle of saying she told me so."
"That's not helpful, Helen," Charlotte said.
"I wish Mr. Blackwood would hurry up and get here," Jane said.
"Me too," Charlotte said. "Purely for informational purposes and not for any other..." She cleared her throat. Jane glanced up to see Charlotte's face had turned red.
"Charlotte, dear friend, do you have feelings for Mr. Blackwood?" Charlotte put her spectacles to her eyes and became very interested in counting the books on the bookshelf.
"Charlotte," Jane prodded.
"Well, I know you weren't particularly fond of Mr. Blackwood. That was before he saved my life. Tell me, friend, what are your feelings?"
Charlotte didn't get a chance to answer because of the sound of hoofbeats approaching. Someone was coming up the road. Charlotte leapt up from her chair. She met Jane's eyes.
"Do you think that could be..."
"Mr. Blackwood," Charlotte murmured. There was a knock. Charlotte tucked a strand of her hair behind her ear. She opened the door, already smiling, but then her smile faded. Because it wasn't Mr. Blackwood standing at their doorstep. It was the Duke of Wellington. Charlotte raised her glasses and nodded to herself, as if to confirm that yes, this man was indeed not Mr. Blackwood. Her face fell.
"Sir, what brings you to Haworth at such an hour?" Charlotte said.
Wellington removed his hat and held it in his hands.
"Miss Bronte, Mr. Bronte, and you are Miss Eyre, I presume. Good evening. I wish I could be here under better circumstances, but I'm afraid it is tragic tidings that bring me."
Jane felt a knot in her stomach, and Charlotte let her glasses droop for a moment, her face ashen.
"What is it?" Charlotte said breathlessly.
"It is about Mr. Blackwood." The Duke's face was grim. "He is dead."
"No!"
Charlotte exclaimed. She started to sink to the floor, but Bran dashed to her and helped her to the sofa.
"That cannot be."
"So Mr. Rochester killed him," Jane said.
"Yes, yes, that is exactly what happened."
Jane found her own legs to be weak and sank onto the sofa. Then Bran found his legs to be weak and plopped down next to her.
"No, not Mr. Blackwood," Charlotte said, tears pricking at her eyes. "It is too unbelievable."
Wellington shook his head.
"I still cannot believe it myself. I'm sure you all gathered from my treatment of Alexander that I considered him very nearly my own son. I raised him."
Jane heard a sniffle and turned to see Bran wiping his eyes. Charlotte seemed to be trying every position of contorting her body in an effort to staunch the flow of inevitable tears.
"Well,
She stood and then sat and then stood and then paced the small parlour.
"Oh, dear."
She put her glasses to her eyes and then back down to her waist. She looked left, then right.
"Shall I make some tea?"
She started toward the stove but then bumped right into a table.
"Mr. Blackwood loved his tea."
Sniffle. Then she sat on the floor and the tears began to flow.
"The smoke from that fire seems particularly strong this morning."
She stood up and reached for a poker. Jane rushed to her side and gently urged the poker out of her hand before Charlotte burned the whole house down.
"Charlotte, sit. There, next to Bran."
Charlotte's brother took her hand and held her close.
"Please, Your Grace, give us this time to collect ourselves," Jane said.
"Of course."
The Duke took a chair in a darkened corner of the room. The Brontes and Jane held one another, and as often happens with a grieving family, they took turns wiping away tears.
Mr. Blackwood had been so brave, so strong facing Rochester. Jane could not believe it had ended so, especially at the hands of the man she'd been in love with. Bran seemed distraught, but for Charlotte, linear thinking did not seem possible, like a train jolted from its tracks.
"Let's see. We need some tea," she would say.
"We have tea, dear," Jane answered.
"We must make up a bed for Mr. Blackwood. I'm sure he will be here."
Jane would run her hand over Charlotte's hair.
"He is not coming." "I see. Yes, I know, Jane. I know."
And then the wind would cause a branch to make a scratching sound against the window, and Charlotte would spring from her chair.
"Perhaps that is he."
Then she would put her spectacles to her eyes and stare at nothing in particular, but the spectacles seemed to help her see things clearly, that Alexander Blackwood was not coming back. After the news sank in, the Duke once more approached the group. Jane spoke for them.
"Sir, this is the most grievous news.
But why come to tell us in person?
Is Rochester in custody? I am sure the Society has much work to do now."
"That's just it," Wellington said. "We do have much work, but we are down a few good agents."
He looked at Jane pointedly. She waited patiently for him to continue.
"Miss Eyre, your service is required."
"Excuse me?"
"Your king and country need you. Your skills are undeniable. You can see ghosts, and you are a beacon, which means you can influence ghosts."
"I'm a what?"
"A beacon is a special kind of seer. Didn't Mr. Blackwood tell you?"
Charlotte raised her hand. I started to tell her, but she was just so stubborn. She put a hand to her mouth. I mean, she was not in the right frame of mind to hear me.
The Duke sighed.
"Ghosts are attracted to beacons, and they can also be influenced by them."
Helen snorted, then placed her finger on her cheek, thoughtfully.
"Wait a second."
"Beacons are extremely rare. We've been looking for one for decades. We've found you, and who knows if we'll ever find one again. Please, you must return to London with me."
Jane stood still for a long moment. Helen came to her and studied each side of her face.
"I think she'll speak yet,"
she said, as if she were a doctor diagnosing a patient. Jane shook her head briskly.
"Sir Duke, I believe you know I was recently possessed, and also married."
"Yes,"
Wellington said.
"And that I then spent days on the moors, starving and cold."
"I figured as much."
"And that I was recently proposed to. Again."
Bran's cheeks went red.
"No, I hadn't heard that one."
Jane took a deep breath.
"My point is, I believe I have been through enough for one lifetime, let alone one month of one lifetime."
Wellington frowned.
"At least consider it. I implore you."
Bran looked at Jane.
"It's what Mr. Blackwood would have wanted."
Jane sighed. She had only just begun to like Mr. Blackwood. She wasn't ready to change her life for it. Charlotte dabbed a handkerchief to her eyes. Jane's feelings for her were an entirely different matter.
"We have only just learned of Mr. Blackwood's death, sir. I need time."
"Very well. Miss Bronte, may I impose on your hospitality for a night?"
Charlotte nodded.
"Of course. Anne? Emily?" The sisters appeared from the kitchen. "Would you take the Duke's bag up to the guest room?"
She emphasized the words guest room, and Jane inferred it to mean, "Quickly, clear out your room and make it look like a guest room." Jane poured the Duke a cup of tea while Charlotte and Bran scurried about preparing for a guest.
"So, what do you think of my offer?" the Duke said.
"It has not been nearly enough time for me to consider it."
"Right, right."
They sipped in silence for a moment.
"I am so sorry about Mr. Blackwood," Jane said. "I did not know him as long or as well as you, but he will be missed."
"Yes,"
the Duke said.
"His absence will be felt for some time to come. In mourning him, my mind turns toward one thought."
"What is that?"
Jane asked.
"How best to avenge his death, and the best way is with your help."
"Sir,"
Jane exclaimed,
"I will not be made to decide tonight. In fact, I believe this is the appropriate time to bid you good evening."
She went to rush out just as Bran was coming in.
"Did someone say avenge?"
Bran asked.
"One last thought before you sleep on this, Miss Eyre,"
the Duke said. Jane paused at the door.
"There is but one way to make Alexander's death have any worth."
She closed her eyes and heaved a deep sigh. How did the task of avenging Mr. Blackwood's death end up at the feet of a poor, plain orphan? Up until a few months ago, Jane's only concern was staying alive, finding enough food, and now she was supposed to avenge a death. "Good night, sir," Jane said. She made her way to her shared room with Charlotte, but before she got very far, she overheard Bran say, "If things are so dire at the Society, perhaps you need more seers." As Jane and Charlotte and Helen lay in bed, Jane could hear sniffles coming from her friend. "Charlotte, you must be in such pain." "Truly, I am in as much pain as one would anticipate upon learning an acquaintance has died. Yes, that is the amount of pain I am feeling. The expected amount, no more, no less." Sniffle.
"What did he mean when he said beacon?" Helen said. "You can command ghosts."
"Helen, please," Jane said. "Quiet."
"All right,"
Helen said. After a few moments, she whispered softly,
"Wait, am I saying all right because you commanded me, or because I want to be quiet?"
"I am not commanding you," Jane insisted.
"Have I ever made any decisions for myself?"
Helen said. Charlotte sniffled loudly. "Helen, please, Charlotte needs us right now." "No, I don't," Charlotte said.
"I hardly knew him." "I'll be quiet, but that's because I want to,"
Helen said. "Thank you," Jane said. She turned to Charlotte. "You did know him. You spent quite a bit of time with him. Only as much as propriety called for. No more, no less." She sniffed again and then blew her nose. "My, this room must be dustier than I am used to. I do believe it has gotten in my eyes."
"It's dusty,"
Helen said.
"Maybe you should command me to wipe it down."
Jane sighed loudly. She decided not to spend any more time convincing Helen she wasn't commanding her and convincing Charlotte that Mr. Blackwood had meant something to her. Jane spent the restless night considering her choice. She was not interested in revenge. She was not interested in prestige. She was not even interested in the £5,000. But she was interested in her friend's broken heart. The following morning at tea, the Duke shifted uncomfortably in his chair. And then he shifted some more. He took a sip of tea, which was too hot, and spit it out. He stood and walked to the window and stared out, trying with all his might to appear calm and pensive. Charlotte and Bran bustled about, trying to look busy. "I'll go," Jane said, deciding to put him out of his misery. The Duke whirled around.
"You will? Miss Hare, you will not regret it. With your seer ability and your beacon ability, you will be a star."
"A star of what?" Jane said.
"Why, a star agent."
Jane set her teacup down. "I don't have any desire to be a star anything. I only wish... Well, you don't need to know my reasons." The Duke bowed his head.
"I will pack at once."
Jane gazed at Charlotte and Bran, wishing she didn't have to part with the closest people to family she'd ever known. Then she looked to Helen, who had been sitting in the corner, arms folded, pouting.
"Do you want to come with me?" Helen shrugged.
"You tell me."
"I'm asking you," Jane said.
"Old friend? Dear friend?" Helen sighed.
"Yes, I will come with you."
Jane turned back to the Duke.
"Where are we going?"
The Duke smiled widely.
"London."
30. Alexander. Alexander existed in pure agony for what felt like days, weeks, months. The cut on his head throbbed in time with his shuddering heartbeat, slowing as blood flowed out and out into the dirty river. Vaguely, in a faraway sense, he knew he had to climb out of the water, that he would drown if he slipped off the carriage door he'd managed to grab. It had been a frantic scramble as he'd heaved the top part of his body onto it, and already his shirt sleeves were shredded from the ragged wood edges, and splinters dug into his cheek and neck where they pressed against the damp wood. Still, he could feel himself slipping, gravity dragging him deeper into the river. Objects bumped against his legs and feet, trash tangled around his limbs, drawing him off the carriage door. But when he tried to kick, to gain just a little momentum and haul himself farther out of the water, his body refused to obey. Whether that was from the cold or his body's slow betrayal, it was hard to tell.
I need to climb onto the bank, he thought, but his mind was so sluggish that the thought could hardly form at all. I need to go after Wellington. I need to find Miss Bronte and Miss Eyre. But his body did not respond. He floated on the door until the force of the earth, the river, and all the debris finally succeeded in drawing him down far enough that the door tipped, and he slipped under.
Welcome,
whispered the ghosts who drowned here. What Alexander did not see, could not see, were their eyeless forms, the shriveled echoes of their skin picked to shreds by fish. They reached for him, translucent fingers drifting through his ribs and face. He didn't see them because he'd fallen unconscious again, but even without his guidance, his body fought for survival, his lungs held fast against the urge to breathe in, his mouth pressed tight against the temptation of falling open, even as his blood pumped into the water and his body began to shut down from the lack of air, that human desire to live kept him going, until even that failed.
Welcome,
said the ghosts that surrounded him. Suddenly, water whooshed away and air surged into his body. He felt heavier as he was heaved onto solid ground, and half the Thames exited his lungs into a sputtery cough. Rocks dug into his hip and shoulder, but he was definitely alive. When his breathing became steady, he was distantly aware of being lifted into strong arms and carried. Reader, though Alexander spent much of this time barely aware of his surroundings, focused mainly on his heartbeat and the throbbing in his head, we feel confident in painting this picture for you. What we describe is based on separate accounts of no fewer than 100 ghosts. A tall, radiant woman had approached the water, her hair gleaming, her skin glowing. She'd drawn the attention of every single ghost in the Thames, which meant when she asked about a missing young man, they were able to lead the way. Then she dived into the water and pulled him onto the shore, where she and a man made sure he was alive. Satisfied, the radiant woman lifted the young man into her arms and bore him into a building off the river. "Will you stand guard for me?" she asked, and every single ghost scrabbled to do her bidding. They ring the building, ready to alert her at the slightest suspicious activity. Gentle reader, by now you've probably guessed the woman's identity. Bertha Rochester. Indeed, she and Mr. Rochester had left Thornfield almost immediately upon reuniting, rushing to London to confront Wellington. Instead, Wellington had dumped Alexander in the river. But it wasn't as bad as it could have been. Alexander, it seemed, was going to live. Even so, he was mostly dead all day. When Alexander finally came to, the sun was down, and only a candle glowed in the warehouse where Mr. and Mrs. Rochester had taken him. He'd been stripped of his outer clothes and wrapped in layer after layer of blankets, but in spite of those attempts to warm him, chills still racked through his body, probably from the blood loss, he realized, and his head felt light and floaty, also probably from the blood loss. But he seemed to be alive, so that was something, and Wellington wasn't there. More good news. Both Rochesters were sitting with their heads bent together, discussing something in hushed tones, but when Alexander groaned, they looked up. "You're safe," said Mr. Rochester, "and we won't be disturbed." Alexander wasn't sure how comfortable he could feel with Mr. and Mrs. Rochester looking over him and offering assurances, as one had been possessed for years and the other had been locked in the attic. But the former seemed a changed man from the one Alexander had known during his time in Thornfield, and the latter was clear-eyed and clean.
What?
Alexander's voice cracked, which would have been humiliating if he'd had the energy to be humiliated. Instead, he just closed his eyes and breathed through the exertion.
"I forgot to mention," Rochester said. "Wellington is evil."
Alexander groaned as he forced himself up, struggling to hide the fact that his head was swimming and his whole body hurt.
"Thanks."
His throat felt like it was on fire with the word, but he'd rested enough while he'd been mostly dead.
"Thank you for coming to help me. Are you both well now?"
Mrs. Rochester cut a glance at Rochester, her expression darkening for a moment. She already seemed much better than any mere mortal had any right to be after being locked in an attic,
But she hadn't forgotten. That much was clear. Her husband's face had been the face of her captor for so long, and no one overcame that overnight.
"Perhaps not yet," she said at last. "But we will be."
"This may sound strange," said Rochester. "But are you the son of Nicholas?"
"Yes. Yes, he's my father. You knew him, right?"
"You look just like him."
"He was a good man."